In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up, that by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. Wow, I just got back from a beautiful camping trip, my first solo camping trip with my dog up in Grand Lake, and just met some beautiful people and just remembered how, you know what, there really are amazing people in the world if you stop and just reach out, say hi, get to know them. I probably spent about an hour and a half with this beautiful woman in her store and just connected about what was important in life, what was meaningful, had this beautiful exchange. And now I have a new friend that I will be definitely being in touch with. So it only takes a moment, folks, just to reach out, to reach in and connect with one another. So I have a very special guest here, my dear friend, my cohort, comedian, spiritual, and political uncommentator, and the persona behind the Swami Beyond Ananda, Steve Fairman. Steve, thank you so much for being on The Spark.
Thank you for having me. And I see your doggy right there is behind you on the couch. So this is, you got a partner for your podcast.
Yeah, she's not being very appropriate for the podcast.
She's being very appropriate. If a dog were doing a podcast, it would be totally appropriate.
Right. So, Steve, my goodness, you know, you are one of those people that I feel like is always up on what's happening in the world, what to kind of maybe focus on moving forward, if you will, in the world, so that we can get through these times the best way that we can. Tell me a little bit about what you've been experiencing, curious about what's coming through to you, and where can we find peace? Where can we find that path forward?
A lot of good questions. You know, about 12 years ago, my colleague, Bruce Lipton, cellular biologist, and I wrote a book called Spontaneous Evolution. And at the time we wrote the book, Spontaneous Evolution, we thought of as a noun in the future. And now we are coming to recognize it's a verb in the present. It's happening right before our eyes. And again, it's often said that chaos and crisis leads to evolution. And that's really where we are right now. We're seeing tremendous chaos, confusion, polarization, political polarization. And all of this is all of our collective consciousness emerging and everything else that's in the way coming up in front of it. So we're seeing a lot of fear, a lot of fear-based propaganda on all sides, really. And people, what happens when we're fearful is that we go into fight, flight, or freeze. And the parts of ourselves that are most resourceful, our creativity, our imagination, our broad view gets narrowed, and all of the blood goes to our limbs as we prepare to defend ourselves. And so since this, you know, the lockdown, and by the way, I'm kind of an upbeat person, so I don't like using the word lockdown. I prefer using lock up. Doesn't that feel better? We've been locked up. We're not locked down. That's a downer. Locking up, it's upbeat, right?
So I love it.
So you know, ever since the lockdown, my wife Trudy and I have been educating ourselves and using the time as an inner time, as a time to I hate to use the word reset because it's being used by the top-down people. I prefer using the word we set. And the we set is where we, the people of the world, we humanity, we set a new standard. We set a criteria for how we want to live in the future and for how we want technology to be used as a servant and not a master. So my wife, Trudy, and I have been involved with holistic health for years and years and years. That's how we stay healthy. We don't, rather than health insurance, we have wellness assurance through the various practices that we do. And so as the COVID narrative began to unfold and we began our self-education process, being home alone, we just began to recognize that there is what we're being told is not the truth. It's manipulative propaganda designed to put us in fear and designed to deplatform all of the holistic means that a lot of people that we know have been using. And this is an opportunity to take all of that off the table and impose a medical tyranny. It's very difficult to talk about this. I live in the Berkeley Hills, and in these blue states and in these areas, people are very, very dedicated to the idea that they believe in science and that science is telling us that that the lockdowns were good, the masking was correct, and vaccinations are the way. However, as we've observed what's happened, we've noticed that the treatments for COVID were deplatformed completely. So there was nothing for people to do from the time they got diagnosed to the time they were admitted to a hospital, at which point it's almost too late. There were treatments like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin C, either in the mega doses or intravenous vitamin C. And these have been used around the world. And the relentless propaganda machine that is mainstream media has been beating this horse completely and just banging away at this narrative. And because people on the progressive side, all of my tribe, they believe in science. And so one of the propaganda tactics, I'm calling it Trumpin' Lumpin' is the word that I use when people see something that's happening, an awakening that's happening on the conservative side, and they lump it in with Donald Trump. Trumpin' Lumpin'. And so it's very easy to dismiss Donald Trump. For those of us on the progressive side, we certainly recognize him as a sociopathogen. Each of the two sides has been given a political narrative that is very limited. And the facts that these fact-based people are given are excluding very important facts. So I'm looking at my job right now in the as part of this great upwising is to really bring the tribes together and help people. And I've segued my Wiki Politiki radio cast to a broadcast, a podcast with a conservative, at least conservative background colleague, Michael Maxente. We're calling it Front and Center, Writing Our New Story Together. And this is looking to overgrow this political polarization. And instead of using these two notions of progressive and conservative as dueling dualities, we are seeing them as dynamic duo dance partners, where each of them has wisdom that informs our current new word situation.
Well, and isn't that just it? You know, a good friend of mine, Tarek Monib, did the hashtag pledge to listen with his movie. I believe you and Trudy saw it as well.
Yeah.
Free Trip to Egypt. And so, and just how remarkable it is if we would be willing to do that. Once we are willing to put our egos in check, leave them at the door, open up our hearts and listen to one another, it's amazing the ground that we can actually share. And as you're saying, the wisdom we can learn from one another.
You know, the latest stats show that about 70% of people in this country would prefer to work together and find ways to work together. And the political narratives are very polarized because the political parties are basically self-serving. They're not really about us. And it's really a form of extortion. I'm on all lists, conservative and progressive. And so blah, blah, blah. Look at what the bad guys did. Send us $3. And that's pretty much their approach. And so we talk to people like Tariq, who created, we highly recommend that movie, Free Trip to Egypt, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Highly recommend that movie. There's other organizations in this country, Living Room Conversations, Braver Angels, Listen First, and all of these groups are designed to bring people together in rehumanizing conversation. So that instead of focusing on the identity politics that keep us separate, we're focusing on the identical issues that we all have in common. We all want clean air, clean water, clean soil, clean food. We want a safe world for our children and their children. And we want a world with truth, transparency, and integrity.
That's so beautiful. That's the vision, right? That's exactly what we think have to start moving towards. And I love that, you know, one of the things that you said is this has become this beautiful time for you and Trudy, and now sharing it with so many other people of how we can start doing this, how we can start changing the narrative. The old narrative no longer serves us. It never did.
Yeah.
So as you're rewriting the script here, what is something that would be a first step for people? I mean, I'm hearing, listening to some of these, you know, podcasts, watching some films, opening up their minds and hearts. What else?
The first step, you know, we need a conspiracy of people around the world. Now, conspire means to breathe together. Mm-hmm. So we all need to breathe together. We need to actually take a deep breath. And in the process of breathing, of course, the Swami will tell you that breathing is the key to long life. When we breathe in, we inspire. When we don't, we expire. So it's very important to keep breathing. And what happens is when we actually have this steady breath, just imagine four beats in, four beats out, four beats in, four beats out, or however you want to do it. What you're doing is that you're reattuning yourself to the rhythms of the universe. And we've, in our so-called civilization that is disrespectful of the natural world, we've woven ourselves out of that natural connection. We become more susceptible to the manipulations of human beings or inhuman human beings. And so the first step is to take responsibility. There's three steps: interdependence, independence, and interdependence. The interdependence is rehooking ourselves with whatever we call the one spirit. You know, whether we call it God, whether we call it the great spirit, whether we call it the great mystery, the power of universal love, whatever that is, if we're hooked into that, then we don't need to get things from people outside. And we become a beam and a beacon. And, you know, we have become a bringer of heaven on earth. As I'm coming to understand, heaven on earth is not a destination. It's a practice. It's a practice. And so when we come fully breathing so that we're oxygenating our brain and that we've pulled ourselves from the fight or flight, then we're better able to take in the truth. And as Swami will say, the truth shall upset you free and begin a new narrative. Now, one of the first things I would do, I think there's two very viable sources. And the way we know that they're viable sources is that the mainstream media and government is doing everything it can to deplatform and discredit them. One is called the Children's Health Network. This is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s site. Very informative, very fact-based. And those are the facts that you're not going to get if you pay attention to mainstream media. And unfortunately, all of the fact checkers like Wikipedia are inundated with elements from the pharmaceutical industry, et cetera, et cetera. And all of their tactics date back to tobacco company tactics. Everything that the tobacco companies used to tell lies, to mislead the public, to essentially poison us, is being done by the pharmaceutical industry now. So that's number one. Number two is Mercola, Joseph Mercola, M-E-R-C-O-L-A. And these two sites are doing a really tremendous job in educating people about what's really going on. Now, I think that what's happened in this country, I call it the don't ask, don't tell policy. Let me go back to Thomas Merton. You may know Thomas Merton. He was a very well-known Catholic monk. And in the 1930s, he was a rich playboy in his 20s who had an epiphany and decided he wanted to devote his life to spirituality. And so he became very famous. He became a very famous writer and so on. And sometime after World War II, when he began to read about how our American government was taking Nazi scientists and employing them, hey, you know, we defeated evil. Let's put evil to work for us. Right? And he created the word unspeakable, the unspeakable. And he talked about the unspeakable. He called it unspeakable for two reasons. Number one, because it was unspeakable evil. Number two, because it's very difficult for people to speak about that. As an example, my wife Trudy was born in Germany, came here when she was 3 years old. As a teenager, a young woman, 19 years old, she spent a year in Germany and stayed with her relatives and so on. And she asked them, what did you know about the Holocaust? And their answers were pretty uniform. Their answers were, we had heard rumors about it. We were told it was American propaganda. And frankly, that's what we chose to believe, because to believe otherwise would have been too horrific. Mm-hmm. So as we've seen perpetration after perpetration, from the Kennedy assassination to the King assassination to the Kennedy assassination to 9/11 to all of these perpetrations, and for every one of these perpetrations, our moral response was to turn away. And I think part of it has to do with the progressive mindset tends to be secular and not religious. And whereas religious people would have an understanding of what evil is, the progressive side has chosen to kind of ignore that and has adopted a kind of moral relativism. And after Donald Trump's election, I decided to embark on a little inquiry about how that could have happened. And one of the really intelligent pieces that was written about it was by Ken Wilber, the integral.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote a very long paper about how Trump was able to get elected and the blind side of the progressives. And blindsidedness, thinking that we have the facts, therefore we can impose anything that we want. We're right. And just as surely as fundamentalist religious people have made themselves right, declared themselves right, there are fundamentalist atheists and fundamentalists. We won't call them scientists, because science is about inquiry. These are people who believe in scientism, which is the religion of science, and who have settled into these beliefs. And it's because of the progressives' unwillingness to confront evil time after time after time that we are now facing a very Orwellian situation.
Indeed. I mean, I feel like it was just last night, I was speaking to my partner who's in Central America right now on a spiritual quest himself. And as we were speaking on the phone, we said, you know, this does feel like the book 1984. And yeah. I said, and it feels like if you ever read Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
Exactly. Where the truth was being rewritten, history was being rewritten, and all the books burned.
Exactly.
So we need to take a break really quickly. We're going to be back. Actually, so much here, Steve. And I just feel like when I'm talking with you, I'm just trying to assimilate and incorporate as much of this as I can, because this is just some of the essential messages. And I feel like, wow, thank you so much for sharing this with the listening audience. So important. We're going to be back after the break, everyone, with actually Swami Beyondananda, and have him here for a little bit to answer some of these questions as well, but in his own special nature. So come on back after break. We'll look forward to seeing you again here on The Spark.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
So welcome back to The Spark. I am here with actually the Swami Beyondananda, which is a persona of Steve Behrman's. And I had the joy of seeing Swami actually in real life a few years ago here in Fort Collins when the Swami performed and I met Steve for the first time. So this is the kind of humor that really actually is opening. It opens our hearts and minds while we're having a good time. So Swami, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. And you know what? We have no choice. Wherever we are, we're always here. And it's always now. The good news is I predict that living in the now will be the wave of the future and time itself will become a thing of the past.
wise words, Swami. So Swami, tell me a little bit about just kind of what you see, you know, moving forward. We kind of have an idea. We talked to Steve a little bit about what's been happening and what we need to be aware of and this fear culture that we've really been inundated with. And okay. So as we're moving forward, Swami, tell us, I mean, what can we do to really resource ourselves so we're showing up in this world in the best way that we can?
Well, the first thing to remember is that we have the choice in every moment whether we feed the wolf of love or feed the wolf of fear. And the great news is love is more powerful than fear. Otherwise, we'd be singing, "All You Need Is Fear." She fears you. Yeah. No, we're not singing that. That is a very good thing. And, you know, in the past, when people were dissatisfied, when there was great unrest, there would be a revolutionary uprising to overthrow the system. Well, in these evolutionary times, we need an evolutionary uprising to overgrow the system. You know, earlier you were talking about this 1984. Well, you know what? The best way to overgrow Big Brother is with bigger brotherhood and sisterhood and loving one anotherhood. Okay. And so I have developed a 4-step program called the Great Uprising. 4 steps guaranteed to work 3 times faster than 12 step.
Perfect.
Do the math, do the aftermath. Okay. Okay. 4 steps. Wake up, wise up, grow up, show up. Wake up to the illusion of separation. Wake up to the fact that we have been divided and conquered. We have been divided and we've been hoodwinked by a bunch of winking hoods into fighting one another. And then we have to wise up to the power of love and coherence. Wise up to that the antidote to divide and conquer is unite and prevail. Wise up to that unifying power of love. And instead of being separated by all of these issues, let's unify around the virtues and values that the 90% of us who are not sociopathogens prefer. Number 3, grow up from children of God to adults of good. Grow upward in responsibility as we're each sovereign sole proprietors, S-O-U-L, sovereign sole proprietors, who actually have agency in our own lives and bring the power of love and light to the planet. Number 4, show up. Show up on a new playing field, ready to play a new game, thrival for each and all. And this is really very important because people are beginning to do this. And the way to do this is through informal networks of the people who you like and you trust and you know are on the same path. It's very important to be able to look at what's in the mainstream media and recognize that the mainstream media is a brainwashing machine stuck on spin. And once you're able to acknowledge it, you can have a deep sigh of relief, recognizing that you have to be able to actually say we are here in order to have a purposeful destination where we're going. The purposeful destination is a world where we are in cooperation and collaboration. We are in a world that is about four E's right now. These E's are not easy. They're about extraction, exploitation, extortion, and extinction. Using four D's, distraction, diversion, division, and disillusionment. And now we have to move to four C's: collaboration, cooperation, communication, and cultivation. And that's what we have to do. And we recognize that we are the agents of this great uprising. We are here to bring heaven on earth. Our purpose, this is our joyful purpose, is to regrow the garden and have a heaven of a time doing it.
I love this. This is such a beautiful way forward, Swami. It just makes me feel, you know, and I don't know that hopeful is the right word. It makes me feel inspired. It makes me feel infused with that feeling of, wow, each one of us can be in touch with these things and feel empowered that our, literally, our attention, our attunement to this helps move this forward.
That's very, very true. We are giving ourselves an attune-up. And it's important to recognize that evolution is fractal, meaning it is occurring on different levels. So if we want the world to change, if we want things to be pictured differently in the world, if we can do it by ourselves, in ourselves, it is possible. If we cannot do it as individuals, it is not possible to do it as a species. But if one person can do it, we all can do it. You know, don't you think it's very interesting that the insanity that we've been experiencing in this scientific materialist world is that as long as they've been testing drugs, this little pesky thing called the placebo effect comes in. And the placebo effect is just because you believe something is going to make you well, it makes you well. And in about 25 to 33% of the cases, just that placebo works. Now, they're trying to get rid of the placebo so that they can study the drugs. Why don't we all learn to cultivate the placebo effect in ourselves? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Swami, you're proposing a sane world. You must be crazy. So together, as we wake up in this great uprising, we can create our own sane asylum together, where we go sane and recognize that the word sanity comes from the same root as sanitation. Sanitary, it means health. So sanity means healthy in every way, spiritual, mentally, emotional, and physical health. And when you have an insane society that is based on death, that is based on domination, we've been living under the rule of the lowest common denominator now for thousands of years. And so now it is time for us to overgrow the rule of gold and establish the golden rule. And as we do that in our lives and make that individual choice, a critical mass of the uncritical masses can eventually create a space where the old system is busted simply because we've told the truth about it. It has no more power over us because the power of belief is gone. One more thing I want to say about this. Mm-hmm. You know, in the earliest ways that human beings dominated one another, was physical strength. You know, the caveman, you beat somebody over the head, you're dominant. Well, then as we became more sophisticated, it became the economic domination. If you have the money, you can buy this and buy that. And that's still, you know, we still have that form of domination. The most modern form of domination is the domination of thought. And what is most insidious about that is it makes people think that they've thought of something on by themselves, when it has been something that is carefully programmed inside themselves. And they think because they've been made used to that, that this is their thought. So part of this independence and interdependence is recognizing that, asking ourselves, is it love? Is it really love? Is this moving love forward? Or am I giving into fear because I am allowing the interference being interfere with my broadcasting of love?
Well, and what I love about that too, Swami, is that it takes just a moment to do that. You know, I keep coming back to this phrase that I actually used in my interview with Bruce Lipton, but it stuck with me when I used it, because what clicked for me is the point of power is always in the present moment. And so we can feel like, oh my gosh, you know, these whatever you want to call them, institutions, the psychopharmacology and all these other institutions have so much power, and yet we have the power of our attention. So if we choose in this moment, as you're saying, to ask ourselves, is this something that is towards love? Is this something that's bringing love, or is this something that's bringing fear? There it is, right there. We have the power to plug in, or we have the power to say, no, that's not for me. I will not go with that. I will not focus on that. I will not subscribe to that.
The more people, now, of course, this is not being reported on the mainstream media, of course. However, that is why it's very important to have networks of people who are in touch with things that are happening. Most people in America don't know that in March, there were huge demonstrations all around the world on behalf of medical freedom that I am calling the WESET movement. Rather than reset, WESET. We, the people of the world, decide what it means to be human. And if there is artificial intelligence, it is always informed by real intelligence, the real intelligence of nature, the real intelligence of the human heart. And so all of this mechanistic, machine-like domination, they call it population control, and that's not just controlling the number of people on the planet, it is controlling the population of people on the planet from the top down, from the top down. Now, of course, you know that life is always from the grassroots up. A weed will always grow. And so anything that is imposed from the top down, no matter what they tell you, is death. It ends life. It ends the possibility of life. Now, it's almost not possible for that to happen. But in the process of people trying to make it happen, there would be a lot of damage done. And so it's up to us who are able to see the truth. There is a condition, we call it Nazism, N-O-T-S-E-E, Nazism, where people choose to not see what is in front of them because it is too uncomfortable to look at. But with enough love, we can metabolize anything.
So I want to talk more about, Swami, this sounds maybe like a very simple question, and I know that it's also profound. How do we return to this place of love within us when our minds have been so inundated with fear?
Well, you know what? I think that all of these practices that we are learning, like mindfulness, that's a good practice. That's very powerful because here we are. We're inundated with so much information that we suffer from mindfulness. Yeah. So we have to empty our mind for mindfulness. And I have to tell you, I went to this great mindfulness teacher. He was fabulous. And his teaching was, if you want to be mindful and peaceful, two things. First of all, you have to clear your mind of all thoughts. And you have to focus on the center of yourself. And I did this practice. It absolutely worked. I am now thoughtless and self-centered.
Great.
I went to a silent retreat. It was so quiet, you could hear an opinion drop. And so part of this silence, part of this space of doing nothing is to really allow all of these programs to sit and settle and release. You know, it used to be that children simply went out and played and there was timeless time. And now everybody's time is so programmed. Mm-hmm. And so part of taking back our lives and taking our world forward is to actually bring ourselves to a space of silence where we have nothing, where we have nothing. Because as Swami Satchidananda said, nothing will make you happy, as in no thing. Mm-hmm. No thing. Our entire spiritual world is based on the idea that you need something out there to make you happy, that they're going to sell you. And if you look at all these people who are busily pursuing happiness and you look at their faces, you think, that person must have run right past it. Okay? People say, Swami, I want to uplift the world. And their mouths look like this. You want to uplift the world? Uplift the corners of your mouth. This is called the levitational pull. So once you've had this space of quiet, then the next thing that you do in this very simple practice is this. Now, just by putting your mouth into that position, no matter what you're thinking, your body thinks you're happy and you begin to create happiness hormones. So we have the power to generate happiness from within and become a radiator of happiness. Somebody asked me recently, Swami, I want to be in the spotlight. I said, great, light your own spot first. And when we each light our own spot, then people will look at us and they'll go, I'll have what they're having.
Yes.
So this is part of it. Now I know that we have the amazing power of creation in that we can create our own thoughts. People ask me, Swami, do we create our own reality? I say, well, you know, we used to, but now it's mostly made in China. But nonetheless, we create our own responses to reality, and that is our responsibility. And so the ego wants to be on the battlefield. The ego wants to be right. And when we have feeling that things are out of control, we forget that there is a rhythm of the universe and this power of love that is with us all the time. And we think that we need to use the power of the mind and the power of the ego to control things. And the more we try to control things, the more out of control they get. There are well-meaning people who think that the best way to deal with the foibles of humanity is to turn us into machines so we will lose all of our humanity. And then we'll be controllable, and then we won't have problems, but we won't have life. And so life is about having problems. Heaven on earth is about having better problems. Mm-hmm. You're living in heaven on earth, you're not asking, how do we keep these children from killing one another? Heaven on earth, we go, how do we make sure that every child has the opportunity to fully fulfill their destiny? We call that fulfillment, where everybody's light can completely shine. That is a better problem to solve. Where's my next meal going to come from? But what kind of healthy and delicious food can I cook and share with the people I love? Those are better problems. And that is our future if we are to have a future.
Yes. Yes. And truly sounds like heaven on earth. I've, you know, said forever, Swami, that if I had a bumper sticker, it would say, life is messy. And that it's okay to have this mess. Because to quote, you know, to go back to something you said at the beginning of the show, you know, this chaos that we're in, these times, it's like this grain of sand that's in the oyster. And from that agitation, from that chaos becomes this beautiful pearl. And I feel like that's part of what's happening now. That if we can breathe through this time, know that, you know, part of what's happening, that it had to come to this point for everything to get shaken up. You know, everything got shooken up. Mm-hmm. And so now we can sift through it for the true gold, which is being a light first unto ourselves, allowing that delight or divine light in, which is delightful, and then allowing that to emanate to others. And it truly, once we are holding on to that light, you walk down the street and you're affecting everyone that you meet. And so you really can be an agent of change. Just deciding that I'm going to do this. I'm going to presence with myself and then bring my beautiful presence to the world.
That's exactly right. I'm starting a new political party. It is called the Right to Laugh Party. One big party. Everyone is invited. Bring your gift and give your presence to the world. So that's what this is all about. And, you know, we don't have to unite in uniformity. What's very, very interesting is that over on the progressive side, there is a great deal of diversity in terms of how people look and their sexual preferences and all of that. However, there is a lack of diversity in opinion. Everybody is supposed to believe the same thing. If you go to a college campus, and I would get kicked off campus for the answer I gave a couple of weeks ago. Somebody asked me, Swami, what's your take on gender fluidity? I said, it's very simple. If the fluid comes out the front, you're one gender. If it comes out the bottom, you're another. Gender fluidity, that's all we need to know. But if I did that on a college campus, I would be deplatformed because I am not following the appropriate dogma. And dogma is always based on fear. So if you're able to make people fearful, then you can program them. Mm-hmm. And so part of this great uprising is for people to emanate love and metabolize the fear. Certainly when there are real dangers, whether the danger comes from the virus out there, or whether it comes from the ideas that people are trying to put into our heads, the more we look at these with fear rather than observe them as something we need to be concerned about, but not be taken over by the fear, then we have mastery of that. And you're absolutely right. What you said is that all of these things that are happening to us are designed to awaken. All of these little irritating grains of sand are actually bringing forth the pearls of wisdom that if we are to get through this period of time, this great upheaval and downheaval, compared to downheaval, upheaval is a lesser of two evils, right? If it gets us through this time, it's because we've had these challenges. Donald Trump, if there was no Donald Trump, there would have been no awakening that would have happened about the bigger picture in the system. Mm-hmm. And now that we've actually excised that malignancy from the surface of the body politic, now we have to go deeper and deal with the heart disease and the other deeply sociopathic illnesses that we've had. And we have to begin to face those with the love that each of us has been given, and that collectively we can gather in one place to open up the heart of humanity.
Swami, thank you so much. We're going to have to go to break. This is such an important message. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Namaste, namasko. Bye.
We'll be back right after this with Steve Behrman. Come on back for The Spark.
Learn how to lead a happier life on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. I'm here with comedian, spiritual, and political uncommentator, Steve Behrman. Steve, it's such a joy to have you on the show, and thank you for bringing Swami Beyondananda on as well. You know, one of the things that we were just visiting about during break is the duality of addressing and speaking about the darkness, which is important, speaking about the fear and also describing the light and our movement towards the light. You know, I've heard people say, and I'm curious your take on this, that the darkness and the light are actually just aspects of one another. If we look at like the yin and the yang symbol, they're actually, like you were saying, we needed Donald Trump so we could get to the light.
You know, this is really, that's one of those great spiritual paradoxes, is that in this world, in order for us to really appreciate love, we have to actually experience and look at non-love, the absence of love. And, this is really important. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any life or any story. Otherwise, every story would be, there once was a little boy and he lived happily ever after. So what our learnings and our depth and our understandings. And some would say the way that we give God experience is through our lives and how we live. And so part of this journey is finding ourselves in the midst of the chaos and confusion. And that's where we are right now. And in social movements, you know, what came to me yesterday was Amazing Grace, that beautiful song, Amazing Grace. And some people know that it was written by a man who was involved in the slave trade. And when he had the epiphany to end his participation in the slave trade, you know, I know a lot of people in the unity and religious science movement don't like singing that saved a wretch like me, and they prefer singing that saved a soul like me. But wretch is the appropriate word, because I think that in order to appreciate how uplifted we are by love, it's only when we've experienced a depth of wretchedness and perhaps our own wretchedness and have been able to recognize that and come to a place of forgiveness, not a glib forgiveness, but a forgiveness that comes from awareness, acknowledgement, and acceptance. And then we forgive and we liberate ourselves from the prison of this old relationship and this old way of being. I just did a fabulous interview, and I recommend this book. I'm going to pull the book out. Hold on. I recommend this book if you have not interviewed Bruce Grayson. Bruce Grayson's an old friend of mine from many, many years ago. He was in my writing class when I taught writing at University of Michigan. And he went on to be, he was a ER psychiatrist. He worked with Ian Stevenson, who helped children remember their past lives and investigate that. And Bruce Grayson, his book is called After, A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. He has made his life's work studying near-death experiences. And almost uniformly, when people have fearful or horrific experiences of near-death, that's rare, usually when they breathe, if they can, when they spiritually breathe and allow themselves to lose control and go with the flow, they find that they're on a wave of love. And what people who've returned from these experiences that cannot be explained, you're brain dead, there's no brain waves, and yet people have experiences. There are also experiences that people have had where while they were in a coma, somebody that they knew died. And they saw this person on the other side. They would have no way of knowing. So Bruce's conclusions is that the more people who've had these near-death experiences lose their fear of death, and almost as importantly, they lose their fear of life. They lose their fear of all of these controls that they've put on themselves about what's appropriate, what I should be doing, et cetera, et cetera. And what he found is that people who read about and hear about near-death experiences have their lives transformed as well. So we have a gateway to something that is, even if science doesn't have an explanation for how it happens, science has a way of recording what happens. And with these kinds of experiences, we are able to remind ourselves that we are, that this is a dream that we're in, and that we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. What I'm getting to is that all of the great social movements, like Amazing Grace, that transformation, we have that song because this individual was saved by grace, was saved by recognizing what he was doing, changing that in his life and becoming and writing a song that's been a beacon for billions of people over the past century or so or two. My point is that the great political movements are often spiritual movements. Gandhi's movement was a spiritual movement. The civil rights movement in this country, abolitionism, grew right out of the transcendentalists. It grew right out of the churches, et cetera, et cetera. And when there's a you know, there's three different modes of change. Transactional, which is based on the symptom level. I have a headache, I'll take an aspirin. Transactional change. Transformational is when you get to the root of the condition and you change the root of the condition. Transcendent is when you get above and beyond and you have a higher perspective. And what I'm seeing is that in order to create transformation, you have to go to transcendence. And it's only because the abolitionist movement and the civil rights movement had that transcendent aspect to it, recognizing that this is a long haul. The arc of justice is long, and it is going in one direction. Once you're able to put yourself on that continuum, then you're able to recognize that this is a long-term conversation, and short-term progress will be made if we keep that spiritual depth and perspective and recognize that it's bigger than any of us and that the power of love is really all there is. Love has no opposite. It has an absence of, but there is no opposite of love. It's not like even light and dark, because love is who we are. That's the origin of who we are. All that we are is love, and all that there is love. And on this physical plane where we do have light and dark and day and night and all of that, we have these polarities. However, love is the universal solvent. The warm solution of love is what dissolves all of these toxins and difficulties. It's easy to say, harder to do. But if you're beginning to do this with yourself and in a beloved community of other awakening individuals that are simultaneously humble and exalted, humble, recognizing that the ego wants to take credit for all of this stuff, and exalted in recognizing that it's beyond the ego. And in order to get off the battlefield of one ego versus the other, it's to put ourselves on spirit's playing field and remind ourselves, love is all there is. Love is all there is. And that's what I am choosing to express, not through denial, but through radical acceptance.
Wow, my heart is just like vibrating. I'm resonating so deeply with your message. And that's exactly right. I mean, the Beatles had it.
They did.
All those years ago, they had the answer. And I just feel like this is the message that people need to hear, because this is what can help move us forward. And it's not just flipping a light switch. I think it's where we're making that conscious choice every day, in every moment, in our interactions with others, with ourselves, and with the divine in whatever way that you define that. So I think that this is the answer. And if we keep choosing love as the answer to all the questions, that's how we make our way through. That's what illuminates the darkness.
And we create happiness on a daily basis. You know, it's almost embarrassing, but you know, Trudy and I, we've talked to other people and other couples who've had a similar experience, that during this lockdown time, it's been one of the happiest times of our lives, that we've been able to stop some of the busyness. And there is a reset that we want to call reset. There is a reset of habits. It's an opportunity to spend our time differently and being put onto our own devices and not being able to have all of these external stimulations, we've had to generate that spirit from within. And that's really where it comes from. We become givers instead of takers. And, you know, whoever it was who wrote about the hungry ghosts that we are, when we separate, there was a psychologist I met years ago, remember his name, Stephen. He wrote a book called Answer Cancer. And he worked with Stephen Parkhill.
Okay.
And he worked with cancer patients. And his first question was, and it was a gentle question, when was the first time you separated from God? Mm. How did you separate from God? it's not an accusatory question. It's one that brings up curiosity. And we find that the first time we separate from God is when we compromise our being for doing something that's going to please somebody else because we think that our life is at stake. We think that if we don't please our parents, we'll lose love, we'll lose protection, we'll die. And we all make these compromises, unless we're extraordinary and don't have that kind of challenge. But part of being human, part of what brings out our foibles is this having to make those kinds of uncomfortable choices early on. And then we do that and we fragment parts of ourselves and we don't have our full faculties. And we think that I don't have enough, I'm not enough. And so consequently, I need to get it from out there. Mm-hmm. And if I don't practice the golden rule, if I practice the rule of gold, which is do unto others before they do unto you. And we've all done that. We've all made that compromise because we have not had that. We've not been plugged into that outlet of universal love and light, and it's not shining through us. We forgot. So the practice is whatever it takes to bring forth that love as much of the time as possible and to reconnect whenever we're disconnected.
That's it. That's it. You know, Steve, we are out of time. You are one of the people, of course, I could spend days and days talking with. And I know how essential these messages are. If you were to leave the audience with an essential message to take with them, what would that be? You've already given us so many, but what is it that you would like to leave the listeners with?
You said it earlier in a certain way, the past is done. I love that quote from my friend, Carl Buckheit, a psychologist, give up all hope for a better past. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not that the past doesn't need to be healed. It can only be healed by cultivating the love that we are in the present moment, because the present moment is what presents itself. Or as the Swami would say, now is the time because it's too late to do it sooner.
Perfect. Well, Steve, how do people get a hold of you? What's your new podcast again so people can tune in?
Well, first of all, you can find me at wakeuplaughing.com. I can also send you a link to the page on WikiPolitiki, where we are going to be launching the Front and Center podcast in July. We don't have a site for that right now. We're in the process of putting that up. And that's going to be a place where we're really looking at creating conversations that bring us together and help us write our new story together. So I'm very excited about collaboration. And I want to thank you, Stephanie, so much for your open-minded, open-hearted space for giving people the ability to explore these shadow issues without fear and without drama and without all of this other fuss and bother, that it's part of what our destiny is right now. It's part of what we have to face in this evolutionary moment. And I want to thank you so much for where you are in this conversation and sparking enlightenment and awareness in your audience.
Thank you, Steve. Big love. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll talk soon. This has been The Spark with Steve Behrman and Stephanie James. Thank you for joining us.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shine on.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.